Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Grunewald, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Claude Silver. Claude is on a mission to revolutionize leadership, talent, and workplace culture. She is the world's first chief heart officer at VaynerX and partners with CEO Gary Vaynerchuk to drive their success. Together, they explore what she's learned to scale emotional leadership across a growing organization and why knowing when to rest can be just as powerful as staying in motion. Claude opens up about redefining HR as a human discipline, the power of authentic presence, and how self-awareness becomes the foundation for resilient, adaptable teams. It's a conversation about momentum, empathy, and creating cultures where everyone shares responsibility for the emotional health of the team. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Grunewald, and today I'm joined by Claude Silver. Claude has the coolest job title. I've been following her for a while, the Chief Heart Officer at VaynerMedia. And an equally cool title is new author. You can see the poster in the background there, Be Yourself at Work. So super excited to dive into this conversation with you today, Claude. Thanks for being here.
Oh, Dane, thank you so much. Happy to be here.
It's going to be a blast. How do we get up to speed on your story? Like, how did you come to be doing this impactful work?
I love it. I think I can just cut to the chase, which is I've always been like a player, coach, cheerleader without the pom-poms. Always been that person that is like, yeah, you can do it. Even as a kid, like, you know, if I played little league baseball or soccer, I've always been like, you can do it, you can do it. I was much more hesitant to do that for myself. You know, I wasn't like, yeah, Claude. That took me a long time to go, yeah, Claude. But I have always loved kind of the possibility of people, and I'm fascinated with human behavior. And So throughout high school and stuff, I was like a captain of the tennis team or captain of the soccer team. But really what I loved was just the, you've got this, like, I believe in you kind of thing.
Yeah.
And as soon as I hit the working world where I actually was like getting a paycheck, I was always a manager of some sort. I managed a small grocery store in San Francisco. I managed a Jamba Juice. The role is natural for me because, again, I want to cheer someone on. I want to be able to be like, hey, you want to get from A to C. Let's figure out B, you know, let's get you in B. So you and I spoke about this once before, which is after the initial dot-com bust, right, mm-hmm. after 9/11, and I was in San Francisco, I started a outdoor adventure company, which was primarily focused on surfing, out in Pacifica and Santa Cruz in the cold Pacific. You know, I had that killer tan because I was wearing a 4.3 all the time, 4.3 months. But that right there was everything for me. Just like, you know, all shapes and sizes came, and we'd have those, you know, the 9 foot to 12 foot long foam boards. You know, here I am, I'm, you know, 5'3" on a very good day, and you know, holding the board out there, treading water, you know, and someone much bigger than me is getting on and
pushing them.
I just love that. Even if they like got on their knees, like they got on their knees.
Yeah.
That's better than they did before when they just fell. So that's how I really got into it. I did a lot of running ropes courses and things like that in the Bay Area. And then when I got into like the corporate world, actually like not running a Jamba Juice or that kind of stuff, it was, yes, I think my managers found like, oh, they could count on me to rally a team, to be that kind of unofficial mentor type of thing while I was learning the job or something like that. So put all of that together. And Gary and I met when I was living in London, in San Francisco for about 16, 17 years. Then I was transferred over to London with an advertising agency that I was with. And so we met. I had known who Gary was since about 2009. And I followed him on Twitter because he was just like, it just says it how it is.
Yeah.
And so when he hired me, I started 11 years ago in New York. And I was not only one of the oldest people at the company, but I was literally the only person that had advertising experience, had agency experience. And so he, not only did I was I running a really wonderful team, but he had me do a lot of the interviewing, the hiring, the terminating, going to other offices and, you know, seeing how people were and making sure, like, making sure the Vayner vibe was alive and well and the empathy was flowing. And so when I went to him about a year in and said, hey, man, I love it here. Like, I love it. You're great. But, like, I don't want to do advertising. And I was basically like, I don't want to get this into your hands. I don't want to sell this anymore.
Yeah.
And he said, what do you want to do? And I said, I only care about people. I care about the heartbeat of this place. And so I worked for 6 more months. I resigned. And he would tell you if he was right here. While I was resigning, he was thinking, what am I going to do? How am I going to get her back in? So 3 months later, we had a breakfast. And he said, you're coming back. You're going to be chief heart officer. And I imagine the heart came from, I only care about the heartbeat of this place.
He came up with that just from you making that one statement.
Yeah, the guy's, he's a brander.
Like, brilliant.
The guy can brand anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when he said that breakfast, I was like, cool, that feels about right. And I asked him, what are we building here? And he said, we're building the single greatest human organization in the history of time. And I was like, sweet, sign me up. That's aspirational. I can't wait. And then, of course, I said, you know, how do we know if I'm successful? And this is what he said to me. He said, you will touch every single human being and infuse the agency with empathy. Mm. And we were about 350 now. That I'm sorry, 350 then. We're about, you know, 2,500 globally now. So it's for me to figure out every single day how to do that in every single convo and then scale that, teach it, trust that it's happening when I'm not there, all that stuff. So long story long, that's how I got here to this job.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that. I know when we first connected, we had that kind of moment around surfing. And I must admit, one of my favorite things to do, life to date, has been teaching people to surf. And to your point, whether they just get to their knees or they get to stand up on the first day, there's just this like spark of energy of like, and energy is such a big currency for me. It's just like, oh, I gave them that gift. I allowed them to go and experience that. And whether they surf again or whether they get the bug and they're there every weekend, it doesn't matter. It's just like that moment's so cool.
Yeah, I love that. And the thing I think that's so awesome is like surfing, it's not easy.
No.
Like, I don't want to be like, oh yeah, so you are a dancer, you can surf. It all depends on balance and gravity and which way the wind is blowing.
Yeah.
So it's not easy to say, hey, I want to go surf. But when they get it, wherever they get, they pop up, they get to their knees, they stand up like, yeah, like you did it. You conquered that mountain, man.
That's so cool. And there's and I hear in you, even from the early days of like cheering people on, captaining teams, the Jamba Juice businesses, that it feels like you find energy from helping people grow, but you're also giving energy. So it seems like that's a big thing that you're trading, you know, within the heart.
Yeah, you found it, Dane. That's absolutely it. I think in what you just said, one of the most important things for me, and I found this later on in life, is to be in motion. Mm. That doesn't mean I don't like resting. I love resting and I love sitting still and I love chilling, but I like to, momentum is a big thing for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I'll say. Yeah.
That's super cool. And naturally, having taken on the job with Gary early days, it must have been a courageous moment that you had to come and say, hey, I don't want to do advertising.
Oh, dude. It was, I'm going to Gary Vaynerchuk. Like, all I wanted to do was work with him.
Yeah.
And I just lost the love for the what I was supposed to do. Like, you know, getting this into your hands just didn't matter.
Yeah.
Red, green, purple, it doesn't matter. And what I recognized was it's not that it wasn't because of the clients, not anything like that. That's just not how I wanted to be in relationship with people. I didn't want to be talking about a product. I want to talk about growth.
That's fascinating. So there's this in motion concept, and then there's this like in relationship. So there's, I'm starting to piece together some kind of Venn diagram here on my own notes.
Good. But, tell me when you get it. I'd love to see it.
Well, I'm still looking for my own. So maybe this is cathartic right here.
I'll do yours. You do mine.
Yeah. But being in relationships with people, like, did that just strike you all of a sudden? Did you just walk into work one day and say, that's what I want to do more of? Or did it sort of come on gradually? I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, as a youngster, like a young person, I can remember this, like maybe being even five, of feeling like I could pick up on other people. I didn't know what that meant. I just gravitated towards emotion.
Yeah.
Emotion that I felt from other people. I'll say that.
Yes.
Not knowing that was intuition, not knowing anything about whatever that was. And so I always knew that I had the ability to connect with people, and that whether or not it was connecting energetically or verbally or.
Yeah.
So that's always been, I think, that's been a part of me. Serious, like a part of who I am. So I never had to question that. I've never had to question, like, should I be around people or should I hide out in a cave? Like, that's not a thing I have to question. I know some other people do. For me, I have to remember that I'm a real situational extrovert. In situations and at work, I am an extrovert. I'm giving energy, I'm receiving energy, to your point.
Yeah.
And then I need to cool my jets at times and just, you know, ratchet down a bit and just calm.
Interesting.
And
Yeah. So was it those moments when you needed the reboot, when you're like, I don't want to be attached to this product. I want to just be taking my break and then coming back to the people.
Exactly. I loved the people that put this can together.
Yes.
Loved it. That decided on cursive. Loved it. I love the creativity that goes into it. So yes, I wanted to be around that, but I didn't want to talk to the client about, should it be cursive or should it be capital?
Yeah.
That didn't accept me. And I had a really good career doing that.
Yeah.
And then it was like, you know what, Claude, I was 45. So I knew, not that the clock was ticking, but I had an idea that, oh gosh, Claude, 50 is going to be a big mark for you. Like, that's half your life.
Yeah.
Let's hope. So let's figure this out. If you want to pivot, you got to pivot now, not when you're 80. Right.
And when you were sitting down with Gary 3 months later, when he brings out the chief heart officer title, which I can only imagine would have been pretty touching, were you already in another job, or were you in a moment of like discovery? You know,
discover. You were. So I gave myself a good 3 months off.
Brilliant.
So, and yeah, you had to charge up some credit cards, and that was fine.
Yeah.
But I needed it. And one of the things I learned from that is, oh, wow, I should have taken 3 months off way earlier in life.
Yes.
You know, why didn't, you know, when I was 30 or whatever, just like stopping for a second. So I was just starting to put feelers out for other roles, and I had to be so careful that I didn't get captivated by the sexy title or the sexy role or... For example, like, I love Spotify. Spotify had a role. Like, Claude, just because you love the brand, you don't want to do that work.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and now it's so fabulous, I love Spotify, and I don't have to worry about what their inner workings are like.
Yes.
You know? So I was just starting to reach out, and he caught me at the right time.
That's awesome.
Which is perfect.
I was sharing with you pre-show that my wife had sent me this quote from the Daily Stoic, and it was talking about how we put fields to fallow. so that they can be productive and take a different crop, you know, the next year. Yeah. And it's just like, and she was showing me through the prompt, like, it's important that we do that for ourselves too. So I love that recognition that you had there, that you're like, hey, I should have done this 10 years ago or 15 years ago.
Yeah. And I highly suggest it to people now.
Yeah.
Highly, especially because I don't want to say the younger generation. I think this is prevalent right now for a lot of us, but the younger generation, they're burning out much quicker.
Yeah.
They're hitting that. Their wick is getting shorter and shorter much quicker than ours was.
Yeah.
Or, by the way, then as a Gen Xer, then I even knew my wick was allowed to get short. You know what I mean? I was just like, yeah, sure, I'll punch in. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're frying. And so, you know, a lot of what I say to them is like, before you're 32, before you decide to go get married, before, please try to just take a few months off. You deserve it. Like,
Culturally, I'm big on that. I mean, even coming from Australia and England, where I did my early education, it's common that people take a gap year. They take a year between high school and college. And I think that's so foundational.
It is. It's so remarkable. And I think in America, generalization, I think we think it's like, oh, so you're just going to go backpacking and fluff off.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. I should have taken a gap year and I didn't. I went straight into the only college that accepted me. Mm-hmm. And by the end of my sophomore year, I dropped out.
Yeah.
So I should have, because I didn't know where I was going.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. I didn't drop out. I failed out of my first year. I was at the London School of Economics and it just was not for me.
Oh, man. It's
not for me.
Yeah. But like, hindsight's 20/20. And the great thing is you and I are here now. And when we unofficially mentor someone or someone asks us, oh, hey, what's a piece of advice?
Yeah.
I'm happy to share that with them. Like, don't fry out.
Yeah. No, I love that. So you get into the chief hard officer role. And I know when you and I first met, you were like, hey, it's not HR as people know HR.
Yeah.
Was it then at the beginning or like how it was?
Oh, yeah. So we had two recruiters, one person who did benefits, basically looking at Google.
Yeah.
And learning like that. There were no performance reviews. There were no nothing. And so in that breakfast, the thing I didn't tell you is when I said, you know, hey, what are we building here and how do we know if I'm successful? The first thing I said was, you know, I never wanted to do HR, right?
Yeah.
And he said, yep, you're going to learn HR and then you're going to hire a strong team around you, which I have.
Yes.
And so the great thing is I would never want to presume I knew this world of HR just by being next to it. I need to know how to have tough conversations, what to do when.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm able to pass it on to these really strong HR, you know, hearts that I work with who can do then that work.
Yes.
My job, you know, Gary just put out a video actually 2 or 3 weeks ago. I'll send it to you later.
Yeah, we'll attach it.
Yeah. And it's really talking about this role and what I do and why and how it serves him and how it serves the company. And so in that video, he says, you know, Claude really sets the emotional framework for this company, which I thought was really interesting. I usually say I'm the emotional barometer.
Mm.
But the framework, which I definitely understand. And by the time he and I had that breakfast, which was beginning of 2016, he was no longer able to meet every single employee like he had when it was 50 and 100 people.
Yeah.
And so when he reintroduced me to the company, what he said was, Claude will do with you in those rooms what I did. Like she will scale me and none of this is going to make sense on paper, but it's going to make sense on heart. And I, you know, 10 and a half years later, it does.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. And everyone's a little bit fixated with the word scale right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what did scaling Gary look like in those early years? What does it, if you look back over the last 10 years, like, what are those key elements and attributes that you've been able to take out to touch people?
Oh, yeah. Trusting first.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, like active listening and being present.
Yeah.
So I am no good to anyone if I'm talking to Dane and you're in my office or we're talking on Zoom and I'm thinking about the three problems I have. I should actually say to you politely, I can't be present right now, but I'm going to reschedule with you for 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And you would respect that.
Yes.
Because you want all of me. So being present, the other thing that really scaled him was making sure that any cynicism or fear that was in the system, not only could I find, I could kind of like dig into where and why is that happening?
Mm.
Whether or not like the person is a micromanager and no one wants to work with this person anymore. Hey, you know, let's talk about, you know, how you manage people. How do you think you manage people? How do you think you show up? And so just through, you know, I would say gentle inquiry, you can find out a lot about a person. And because, as I said in the beginning, because I feel like I'm able to pick up on things, I can pick up on patterns. I can hear what people are saying and not saying. You know, I had an interesting conversation with a guy today on Zoom who is crushing the technical part of his job.
Yes.
The skills. He is incredible. He's getting over 1 million views on his social media posts, and that's fantastic. And that's half the job. And that's what I was telling him. That's half the job. The other half of the job is how you show up as a leader, how you communicate. How you do you have a growth mindset? Are you accountable? And the first part of that conversation, he was just doing this. Well, he does this, 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 this. Why don't I make as much money as him? And I just was like, okay. Hey, have you heard of comparison as a thief of joy? He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, it's no wonder you're frustrated.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was so listening to for those types of things. It's like, oh, it's no wonder you want to bounce out of here. We don't want you to. Like, we want you to win.
Yeah.
And we're going to work with you on some of these other skills, which normally are called soft skills. I don't call them soft skills, like life skills.
Yeah.
Because that's the other part of the enchilada here. We want you to like have it all.
Yeah. It is interesting. The way you frame it is like finding and exploring the fear and the cynicism. And that's a great example you've just shared there, Claude, because so much is being driven in our lives, not just at work, at home too, by fear and, you know, comparison. And I think it's hard. It takes intentionality to go find it. And it's even harder to have a conversation about it.
It is. It is. So he thought, this is just to go into it a little bit more. He had been slacking me yesterday and it was just like, I couldn't even read it. It was complaint after complaint after complaint and then proof of how he's crushing it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I talked to some people before I set up a meeting with him today. Like, is this true? Is he great at his craft? You know, I don't know. I'm not looking at his TikToks. And his manager said, yes, he absolutely is, but he's not a good leader.
Mm.
So when I put the time on with him, he thought he was going to be fired. And that's not when I slapped him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, I'm going to set up time with you, meaning to talk about all of this, not like to fire you.
Yeah.
And, you know, recognizing that I probably should have put in the meeting invite, like, let's jam. I don't know.
Jam session. Yeah. That's it.
A little warmer. I don't know, you know, but it all ended up good. He sent a nice Slack and we're going to work together on self-awareness.
That's neat. That's neat.
Yeah.
And there was staying with sort of presence and going out after the fear and cynicism you actually had here, getting into the book, a whole piece on the power of authentic presence. And you talked about why fitting in is outdated. Yeah. So tell me more about that.
Yeah. Fitting in is like, it's just so archaic. It's like, why would I want everyone to look like apples, apples and apples and apples when we have an entire fruit basket to fill, right? Like apples and apples and apples, similar people will get us speed very quickly. We will grow. We have a collective mind share. you know, you went to college with my brother and oh my God, and you dated my sister and oh my God, I love surfing with you, but I don't know how you work, but like, you seem like a cool guy. Come on in. That's culture fit.
Yes.
I'm like, oh my God, you surf, I surf, let's do it. But I don't know how you think. I don't know if you're curious. I don't know, you know, will you be able to kind of roll with the punches and have patience and understand this type of work isn't for everyone? You know, it's by no means is it brain surgery, but by no means is it, you know, a walk in the park. Like when you're in the business of servicing clients, as you well know, there's nothing easy about it.
No.
So that's kind of that. So anyway, so going back to like what I now say is skill set fit and culture addition. So I want you to have the skills that are on this piece, you know. You put in your, you gave us your CV on LinkedIn because we had a job description and it seems to match the skills I'm asking for.
Yeah.
And as we meet and you meet the hiring manager and all of the stuff, we're going to start to inquire not only on your skills, but like behavioral things.
Yes.
Without saying like, are you a nice guy? What I would say to you is something like, you know, Dane, tell me a time where you failed.
Mm.
And if you can actually do that, by owning, that would be great. If you say, well, we failed, I'd like to hear how you failed.
Yes.
For example.
Yeah, that's a really good one. And I guess that self-awareness, that ownership, that accountability, particularly in a highly charged, time-sensitive customer-serving environment, that, you know, it's important in teams.
Oh, my God. It is so important in teams. And I think one of the main things that I wanted to get across in this book, and the book is written in three parts. It's self.
Yeah.
Well, self-awareness, as I was talking to you about this guy, right? Today, he needs to work on self-awareness.
Yes.
Then it's taking that, understanding what your tics are, what your talks are, you know, your triggers, and like how you show up, and bringing that into teams.
Interesting.
And then what does that look like as a citizen of a team? What does that look like, you know, knowing that you're going to have to go through the grind together and build resilience and more than anything, build trust?
Yes.
You know, because if you can do that on a team, well, you can get to speed quicker.
Yeah.
You know, like you just don't have to go through all the drama every day. I already know that when I sit too close to you, you get all agita. Right? You already told me that. I'm not going to sit too close to you. You know, when you lean over my shoulder, it bugs me. So don't lean over my shoulder. We already know that. So it's like, all right, let's get busy.
That's cool. I like that. And speed, I'm hearing, Claude, it's about speed. But when you use the word resilience, it's also about being able to adapt, to shift quickly. So you're not just going all in one direction. You're able to move quickly into multiple directions.
Right. Because in a team, people have specific roles.
Yeah.
Right? Just like on a Formula One crew, on a pit crew, which is fascinating to me. But like, you need to not have any drama because you have less than 10 seconds to get that car back on the road. So like, you got to do the tires, gas, oil, screw it in, bye.
Yeah.
And like, you need to count on me and I need to be able to count on you no matter what.
That's neat. So as a reader goes through the book and they start with the self and then it takes them to like how to be a good citizen of the team, how have you constructed the book? Is it more of like a journey that the reader goes on of self-discovery, or is it more like here are some ideas and frameworks that may help along the way, his stories, narratives? I'd love to learn more.
You know what? I'd say, first of all, I got to send you the galley. So I'll send it to you. You know, it's a paperback. It's not the whole book. It's not the kit and caboodle yet, but it's both. So it's set up as, I wanted this to be a book where anyone could pick it up and just go like, I'm going to open it up to this page.
Brilliant.
Okay. So now I'm reading a story about, for years, Destiny carried limiting beliefs that dictated how she moved through the world, especially at work. She felt like a shadow in the room, watching, second guessing, shrinking. Okay. Oh, interesting. I might be like, on this page, perfection is a myth. Just show up and do the work. interesting.
Yeah.
So I wanted anyone, anyone to be able to pick it up and get something out of it. And the book is set up as self, team, leader, building culture.
Yeah.
So it's really three parts, and it can, you know, it's fluid because all of these things come back to you anyway. So I'm a leader. I'm on a team, and I have to be super aware of myself all the time.
Yeah.
Well, so it's all good.
I think that's important too, because the more I explore teams, I love the way that you've allowed it to be something that you can just dive into and grab what inspiration captivates you, because no one team is ever in the same place. And so therefore it's going to need a different type of energy or curiosity or collaborative moment. And I think people who try and dive too heavily on frameworks or rhythms can fail to create the space for the, well, what's actually happening right now?
Yeah. Well, so I really like what you said. That is the way I translate that is, there are people that need rigidity in their life. That's how they are wired.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to work on a team with rigidity. You need some, at least have the awareness that you are rigid, and you're going to work on kind of widening your gap, you know, widening that circle a little bit, because unless you're an individual contributor, you got to work. It's a conveyor belt here. We got to work together.
Yeah. I've worked with a guy called John Estefanos. He's become a good friend. He's got a platform called Rally Bright, which is all about resilient teams.
Oh,
and
nice.
And every 6 months we come back in and we check on like, what dynamics are we feeling in the team? It's very sentiment driven. But you pick up some verbatims, and our goal is always, to your point, like, how are we scoring on like connection within the team? How are we scoring on adaptability? And that adaptability one is one that can really, just through the season of life, like, hey, everyone just went back to school and everyone's adaptability just dropped this quarter because they've only got so much bandwidth. It's been really cool to work with.
Love that. I'll check it out.
Yeah. When you think about teams from an HR lens, Claude, and particularly with this book and the inspiration from the book, how do you view like the traditional monolithic HR systems we've relied on that are very individual? Like, we hire someone, we performance manage someone, we career develop someone, versus what we may be seeing coming around the corner.
Yeah. I mean, I think HR today has just lost its way. Mm. And I don't necessarily, I don't blame anyone for that. I think that HR was asked to police and defend the company.
Yes.
And I can guarantee you, from all of the people in HR I've spoken to, none of them got into this discipline to be a paper pusher or say no all day.
Yeah.
None of them did. They all got in to be helpful. They all got in to understand both behavior, policy, equal opportunity, those types of things. And, you know, the soul has been, the soul is missing.
Yeah.
The soul is missing. And so that's the kind of the, you know, the drumbeat that I've been beating, not because I know any better. I just know it could be different.
Yes.
That's all.
Yeah.
I know it can be different. And I've seen what happens when you have an HR team that is for the people, that works for the people. And in fact, you know, I don't know our mission statement by heart, I need to, but it is literally, we want to help create career defining experiences for people. You know, I want people to be here for as long as they can, and even longer if that's a possibility. You know, we spent so much time looking for you. Now we hired you.
Yeah.
So let's work together. Let's grow you together. Let's, you know, I don't want you to get disenfranchised, and you might. So let's talk that through before you either A, spread your cynicism all over the place, or just bail, you know? Yeah.
That one's powerful too, because if you're a leader, particularly of an HR function that you know, I've met a lot of HR leaders over the last couple of years that are feeling just a bit tired, a bit stuck. And if you can actually come back to it and centralize around that theme of career-defining experiences, it gives you a lens of curiosity. And you don't have to go and solve things through the system. You can go and ask for stories in the business. Like, hey, tell me a story about something that gave you energy in the last week. And, you know, how might that be playing out elsewhere? It, to me, it seems very accessible.
Yeah, it is accessible. And one of the, you just hit on something that I think is very magical within our company, and I'm sure maybe other companies, which is the accessibility to leadership, the accessibility to going and talking to people.
Yeah.
And we, you know, so for example, we have a very large residency program. It's a great way that we pipeline in and we bring people in. And today, in fact, I've met with two residents and they're like, they both said at different times, like, I just love how easy it was to get time with you. I love how accessible everyone is. And it's like, yeah, well, why shouldn't they? You know, I mean, I've been at those companies where I don't even know who the CEO is. And,
yes.
And I see the door is always shut. So
that's a hard thing to do, though. How do you create a culture where leadership makes time to just be available, not to be available to like structured review cycles or the like?
Well, you have to make it part of the water. You have to put that in the water stream as a expectation.
Yeah.
Of your leadership crew. Like you're also here to create career defining experience.
Yes.
It's not, and I think that's where one of the things that we need to switch is creating the culture, and cultivating the culture is everyone's job.
Yeah. I love that.
It doesn't just belong to Gary or me or to the HR department. It's the CFO's job. It's the, you know, it's literally the person that fills up our snack box every day.
Yeah.
It's everyone. And during orientation, which is every 2 weeks, and I meet all of the new joiners in the Americas, I say to them, you know, congratulations, you're now just as responsible for this culture as I am.
Yes.
And that's a great thing. You get to put your stamp on it. And that's my way of empowering them. Like, we've adopted you. We're going to add to who you are, too. You don't have to change your stripes. You don't have to become a cheetah just because you're a zebra. No, thank you.
Yeah.
I want you just like that.
That's very cool. And it's very, again, going back to my word of energy, it's very energizing if you're joining a company and realizing that all behaviors that you bring or that you observe are going to be contributing to that culture. I saw a great quote the other day that, you know, your culture emerges from the behaviors that you accept, that you indulge. And so we've always got to be very careful on behaviors because it can get out of hand or it can go in a different direction if we're not all owning it.
Yes, exactly. And the behaviors have to be things that people can learn, that that's not terribly difficult. So, you know, for example, one of the behaviors that we have in our water stream, and I keep on saying water because you have to get it in the water. Notice I didn't say Kool-Aid.
Yes.
I don't want anyone drinking the fake juice. I want people drinking the water.
I love that.
Yeah. It's, is the, one of the behaviors is being the bigger person. So that the behavior then would be respect. The behavior would be generosity. The behavior would be accountability. And the behavior would be humility and probably 10 other things.
Yeah.
So when I was sharing with you about the gentleman that was very, very, very frustrated today, and we got to this place of like, you know, why do you feel the need to compare? You obviously feel as though you're not being seen.
Yes.
Well, you know what he told me? He said, I used to be 400 pounds and I was bullied every day of my life.
Mm-hmm. That's an experience.
That would absolutely make me feel invisible also.
Yeah.
And we understand. And so let's work together. And like, that's huge. Because I said to him, I said, you didn't come into this job 4 years ago like this.
No.
So what is happening? And through his time here, he's lost a ton of weight and he's not 400 pounds. And so it's the new him, but he still has the story because it made a mark on him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how those stories, and not just in our lifetimes, like generationally, they pass down. There can be a lot of, we need to make time and space to allow that to be recognized and to be acted upon.
Yeah, generational, I guess it's called generational trauma or whatever,
Yeah. Something
like that. But I also think there's such a thing as generational healing.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You know? Oh, no, I believe it. I think you could... I've got a huge kind of belief around like abundance mindset, abundance theory. Like if you can intentionally will something into being, it can happen very quickly.
Oh yeah, get ready.
Yeah,
get ready because it's here. It's knocking on your door.
That's it. This has been a brilliant conversation, Claude. There's so many other questions that I'm going to want to come back and dive into once I get a chance to read the book.
Oh, amazing!
I love that we talked about some of those early like innate preferences around being in motion and, you know, giving and receiving energy and being in relationships with people. I think for all leaders and team members, it's great to kind of have that sense of like what's giving you energy. I genuinely believe energy is going to be a big telltale of what's going right and wrong in teams, but also it fuels teams. So I love that we started there.
Yeah. Big time. I think I'll share one thing before we end, which is there is a group of people out there that is trying to change ROI into RLE.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. What's the return on energy?
Yeah.
Because that's what we are.
Yeah.
And that's what we're dealing with now.
It's very human because money is not real. But
no.
Like it's real, but it's not real in a human setting. We fabricated it to be a means of transfer. But energy is real. We only have so much energy.
Yeah, we only have so much. And you can actually quantify it.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, I'm going to search that out with Alicia and add that to the show notes too. So thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for that gift. And then, you know, just the way that you're creating this space for emotional frameworks and building the behaviors. I love that we covered those elements and just the structure of the book of like self, team, and then ultimately culture.
Yeah.
I love that you're bringing all team members in to have a role to play in that. And I think that's what's going to sustain teams as AI comes on and as the world continues to change and go through its challenges.
Yeah.
If we can all be responsible for the conversations we're having and how we're treating each other, that's a pretty positive outlook that we all get to share in.
I couldn't agree more. That is what we need. And more positivity, healthy positivity.
Yeah.
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 Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And if any of our listeners want to find the book or any of your new materials, Be Yourself at Work, where do they go?
Yeah, go to beyourselfbook.com.
Brilliant.
Beyourselfbook.com. You can download the first chapter, introduction, first chapter for free, which I think is kind of my favorite part, actually.
Yeah.
And or you can go to my website, claudesilver.com, and write me. Tell me how it's going.
Love it. Well, I look forward to following up again soon. And thanks for making the time today, Claude.
Good to see you.
You too.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,